Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, cultural enrichment, and all-inclusive fares. Discover more at Viking.com.
Today, live in the Free For All studio, the heavyweight champ of the UFC, Stipe Miocic. He is also Cleveland's champion. That's right, Cleveland's champion. Next on the Free For All.
This is Free For All from the Wall Street Journal. Now, here's Jason Gay.
Hey, this is Jason Gay, and this is the Free For All. And it's not every day that we have a heavyweight champion of the world in the Free For All headquarters here in New York City. But joining us today is Stipe Miocic, who is the recently belted heavyweight champion of the world and the Ultimate Fighting Championship. Congratulations, Stipe, on the belt. And you don't have the belt with you. What's going on?
Actually, I do. It's right here.
Oh, there it is. Yeah. Oh, you're kidding me. Yeah. I didn't even see it. It has its own case. That is impressive. Now, do you check it? Do you carry it on? What do you do?
Well, this is my first time besides flying in Brazil. I had it in my carry-on.
Okay.
And then, you know, I'm only here for a day in New York.
Yeah.
So I just put it on my carry-on also. So I don't know how I'm going to do it. I'll probably just do the carry-on.
Now, do you wear it around the house when you're just by yourself, or is it, you know, strictly for promotions?
I try to put it around the house, you know, and put dominance towards my fiance, but it usually doesn't work. She's like, go do the laundry and go clean. I'm like, fair enough. So
Not impressed.
Not at all.
She's just by the belt.
Yeah, she just looks at me and just, with that terror, looks like she's going to kill me. But
well, it's an incredible story, and I want to get into it. And let's go right to the top of this, which is that, you know, we've heard a lot, if you follow the world of sports, about the Cleveland curse, that it has been, you know, more than a half century since a championship has come to the great city of Cleveland. And here is one. You have brought a championship to your home city of Cleveland, Ohio. Do you consider yourself the actual curse breaker? I know people are having some fun with this, but, you know, the city has really put you under its arm.
Yeah, I think I broke the curse. You know, I mean, I brought a title back home. You know, we have a championship. We can celebrate it, and now the Cavs are up next. You know, it's 2-2 right now. I'm not worried about it. They're fine.
You're not. Nothing about last night gave you concern?
No, actually, it gave me better hope because they were, you know, playing them at home. Down, what, 18 at one point.
That's right.
And they came back and took the lead.
Listen, I'm so lazy. I went to bed in the fourth quarter because I was like, oh, they have this in hand. They're going to go away with this. And then Toronto came back.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because my flight kept getting delayed last night.
And
I magically got on another plane and got here earlier. So when I got to the hotel, it was like beginning of the fourth quarter, and I got to the check-in, to check into the hotel, and there was like a line of 10 people. So I'm like freaking out. So I'm like refreshing my phone like every minute. And then finally I got to my room, and there was like 5 minutes left, and they were up. Or whatever, six, I don't know how many minutes left, but then the wheels fell off.
You are an Ohio kid, born and raised?
Yeah, I was born and raised from Cleveland. You know, my family's from Croatia.
Right.
My mom and my dad met over in Cleveland.
And so what was your team growing up? I mean, you know, I know you played a lot of sports, but, you know, who were your guys? Were you a Bernie Kosar guy? Were you a, you know, I don't know.
We had a bunch of guys with Bernie Kosar, Webster Slaughter, Eric Metcalf. You know, the Indians, we had Brooke Jacoby.
Sure.
Tom Tenkan.
Some great Indians teams.
Right, I mean.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and then we had a bunch of good guys, you know, like David Zagie. I love David Zagie. I'm so happy he came to our team. You know, and then we had like Jose Meza.
A Charlie skinny May. Bartolo Colon.
Right? He's crazy, but he still throws gas.
I know.
Right?
Amazing. There was a wonderful clip of you participating in batting practice at, was it still called Jacobs Field? Or called something?
Progressive.
Progressive Field now. And, you know, 9 times out of 10 when they bring a high-profile guest in to do BP, you know, they hit a couple of dribblers, you know, up the third baseline. That's if they're lucky. You put a couple out of the park.
Yeah, my last swing, I got one out, walk away.
Beautiful. And what was the reaction from the tribe?
Oh, man, like I had Yan Gomes, real good friends with Yan Gomes, and Java Chamberlain, man, they were going nuts for me. It was awesome. And then Joey Votto was there, too. He was pumped for me, too.
And then you go around the corner to the Quicken Loans to see the Cavs. Was it game one? Or no, this was the prior series.
No, it was game one.
It was game one. Yeah. And they won both games. Mm-hmm. So, you know, as long as you're in attendance, the Indians and
I
the
I won't
Cavs
be there tomorrow, though. I have to work.
They
I have to work at the station.
They need to get you there. So growing up, you know, if someone had said to you when you were 14 years old, you were a wrestler, but that UFC and a heavyweight championship would be in your future, what would you have said?
I laughed. And I only get punched in the face.
But it's a transition that you know, a number of very good UFC fighters have done in their lives, from wrestling to mixed martial arts. And what was the essential moment where you made that decision? And was it really hard to make that transition at first?
No, you know, when I got into mixed martial arts, I actually was helping a guy out. I was wrestling with him, just trying to get him ready for a fight. You know, Dan the Bulboba, she actually fought UFC before, and Pride and King of the Cage and all that. And, you know, I was just trying to help him out. And, you know, I never left the gym. I loved it, you know, but getting punched, I wasn't, you know, I just didn't know. I didn't know, you know, how good my chin was. I didn't know, you know, I didn't know. And I got hit. And then right then and there, I'm like, oh, I could totally do this. And then after that, it was like, you know, free for all. I loved it. And I, you know, watched YouTube videos of guys fighting, learning how to fight better, just taking up different techniques. It became like a puzzle for me.
What was the hardest thing to crack? I mean, I know you're always working on every technique, but, you know, if you had something that you really knew the least about and you had to really work on when you got into it.
My stand-up.
Yeah.
You know, because I was such a wrestler, I was in a crouched stance. So, you know, every time I would spar, my hands were dropping down. You know? So when I started, this is why I love my coach. You know, I started sparring guys, I would just take them down and ground and pound. It was like, this is easy. And he's like, yeah, we're not going to do that anymore. Every time you take a guy down, we're going to stand you back up. So you got to learn to fight on your feet.
Yeah.
So I did that. And then, you know, I took some time off and just did boxing, amateur boxing, all that. And, you know, that's why I have the best coach in the world.
How was that experience doing the amateur boxing? Do you think that helped a great deal?
Oh, yeah. Doing amateur boxing, tons, you know, just because, you know, I fought, you know, probably 11 or 12 times.
Yeah.
12 times. And it was just amazing because, you know, it was like a fight, you know, getting ready, getting nerves, and just working on my stand-up, which, you know, helped me tremendous.
You know, since you have participated in both, you know, wrestling at an elite level and Division I wrestling, and you also did the boxing, you must have real insight as to, you know, who are the most superior athletes and fighters, and I imagine you're probably partial to MMA people at this point.
Oh, definitely. I mean, because MMA, you know, I think, you know, you got kicking, you got kneeing, you got elbows, you know, boxing, jiu-jitsu, grappling, wrestling. I mean, there's so much involved in it.
Yeah.
You know, it's just not just one martial art. It's to all of them.
The thing that has struck me in the time that I've got to be around UFC fighters and mixed martial arts fighters of any league, that the amount of endurance work and the sort of, you know, physical work you have to do to just be in shape to hang in there, you know, in the length of a fight. You know, if you're in a title fight and you're going 5-minute round, I mean, it's just brutal. I mean, it's akin to, just imagine the most sort of difficult athletic experience you're in, and then someone, you know, trying to get you. That must be a huge part of your training process, just working on that sort of ability to, you know, have endurance.
Yeah, I mean, endurance is everything. I mean, you might not be as good as the other person or technical, but if you have more endurance and then you keep pushing, you know, you're going to find a way to win just because you're going to get that person more tired than you are, and, you know, they're going to mess up.
What's your, you know, tried and true fitness technique? What's a way, if you want to know, you want to get yourself fit, what's your technique?
I like sparring.
Really?
Yeah, I think sparring is, you know, it's like a fight, honestly. Yeah. It's, you know, it's like a fight. You know, you got a guy coming at you, you got to go after them. You know, I think the more you spar, the better it is. You know, you take time off, though. You know what I mean? If I'm beat up, I'm not going to over push my body. That's another thing, too, is I listen to my body when it's, you know, I'm sore and tired. You know, I always back off a little bit.
How do you not just gas yourself out, though, that way? I mean, is it, you know, do you want to watch your body? You don't want to do other things like stairs and running and sprinting and that kind
of
stuff?
I do all of that stuff, too, on the side, too, like in the mornings and stuff like that. I do a lot of plyometrics, a lot of explosion work, a lot of running and stuff, endurance, stuff like that. So, you know, with boxers, the other thing is called road work, you know. And like with baseball, too, when pitchers, you know, would throw, they usually run right after they throw because they'll get the soreness out. So, you know, it's a lot to do with that.
Yeah. When you become the champion, there's always a little bit of a target on your back. You know, people are out to, you know, they're going to say good things, they're going to say bad things, they're going to say you did this and you didn't do that. How do you like the spotlight that has come with that fancy belt over there?
I mean, it's all right. You know, I mean, listen, usually everyone picks me to lose anyway, so it's nothing new. I'm since day one, so I'm a terrible fighter. I'm just a boxer, a guy who just stand up and do nothing else. I mean, I've heard it all. I'm not worried about it. You know, I know what I do. My coaches know what I do, and that's all I care about.
Now, you know, in the fight game of any kind, there's always another component to it, which is sort of the public persona of you. You know, you're, you know, logging so much anonymous time, training with your team, and, like, you know, that's the important stuff that people don't get to see. But you also have to get out there and promote for the fights that you're doing, and you've had some experience with that. Do you like that part of it, or is that something that's not natural and not interesting to you?
In the beginning, it was not natural at all. Like, I just didn't like it just because I just wanted to fight. You know, that's all I still want to do. But, like, I know, you know, I'm gotten more comfortable with it. You know, I'm be myself. It's pretty much what it is. Just be yourself. And, I don't want, you know, honestly, it's not bad at all. You know, I have great people like Dave here. You know, he's an amazing guy. You know, he makes it fun. We have a good time, though. We're just laughing, joking.
UFC 200, you know, as a fight fan, you must have been watching some of the kookiness that was unfolding there with, you know, having a headline fight, losing the headline fight, now having a new headline fight. You know, I don't know, you know, is this that important of a fight for the UFC? Do you look at this as being, you know, a huge, giant Super Bowl-style moment for UFC, or is it just another fight night for them?
No, I definitely think it's, you know, it's a big night. You know, UFC 200, I mean, some of the best stars on that show, best fighters in the UFC are in that card, and it's actually at the new T-Mobile Arena, which is amazing.
It's awesome. So you've been there?
Yeah, I actually got to see it as it was getting built.
Okay.
I think I was actually the first fighter in there. It's kind of cool.
That's kind of cool. Yeah. You weren't at the Guns N' Roses show?
No, I was not. I tried, but I couldn't. I was a little busy.
Will UFC survive without Conor McGregor in 200?
Oh, yeah, that'll be fine. I think they'll be fine. I mean, it's the fastest growing sport, and, you know, UFC knows how to, they're a good business.
Let me ask you about McGregor, because, you know, he is somebody who, by virtue of, you know, both his fight ability, but also his ability to really, really talk himself up, has captured a kind of mainstream casual fan who might not ordinarily be watching mixed martial arts. But at the same time, you know, people who do watch mixed martial arts all the time, you know, they have very strong opinions about him. Overall net, positive for the fight game, or do you think he's a negative for the fight game?
Well, I think any press is good press, no matter what, if it's good or bad. But, it, you know, it's always good.
Yeah.
People are always watching. People want to know. It's like a drama, just anything in life, you know. It's like watching a soap opera for that, you know, like, you know, with that show TMZ. People love it because they want to know what's going on with the celebrities, even if it's good or bad, just because they want to know.
Yeah.
Or, you know, Inquirer or whatever. You know, people want to know. It's all good.
Do fighters like each other? By and large, like, you know, when you have rivals, competitors, people you've squared off against, I mean, you like some more than others and don't dislike and dislike some of them, but do they generally kind of have a baseline respect for each other?
Yeah, I think so. It's professionals. You know, we're all professionals here. We know it's a business. You know what we do.
Yeah.
I mean, and there's some guys that don't like each other, hands down, but, you know, I'm friends with a lot of guys. You know, not a lot of heavyweights. I'm cordial with them. You know, I'm not going to go out of my way and text them and say happy birthday, but, you know, but... You know.
Why don't you give a list of all the people you don't like in the world right now? Just kidding. What do you make of this nonsense about Mayweather and McGregor fighting?
I have no idea. I read a little bit about it, but, I mean, I'm kind of... I had more things to worry about than... That going out of title to win.
Now, I want to go back to baseball for a moment because I want to find out if it's true or not that you at one point were considered, you know, potentially a professional prospect. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I mean, I got looked at, but I mean, there's a lot of guys that are 6'4", 6'5", that can run fast, hit the ball far, and, you know, throw super hard. So it's, I mean,
and you played up through high school, or did you play collegiate as well?
I played college.
And you played third base.
Yep.
Could you hit the curveball?
I think so. I mean, I did pretty well.
Yeah. You're still a young guy. You're still, what, your early 30s?
33.
Okay. You still can get in there. Yeah, look at David Ortiz. You know, the guy's 42. 52, I think. No, it's unbelievable.
That dude's an animal.
I think about, you know, these other sports, but, you know, like legacy sports like baseball and basketball sometimes struggle to get younger people. And UFC, kids love it. I mean, you go to any UFC facility, any training camp, and you see, you know, I have a 3-year-old son, you know, they all want to do it. They all want to, like, learn, you know, whether it's jiu-jitsu or ground game, all that kind of stuff. And what is it about UFC you think that's getting those younger sports fans?
I think it's anyone can do it. You know what I mean? Yeah. I'm not saying they can fight, but just to train, you know, they can train, they've done it. You know, they learn how to box, they can learn how to just, you know, baseball is a tough sport. You know, you got a guy throwing 95 miles per hour with an incredible curveball and a pretty nasty changeup. You know?
Yeah.
It's pretty tough, or, you know, and, you know, you can make yourself, you know, get better at it just, you know, from all the practice. It's not, you know, some people have the ability just to see the ball, you know, some people don't have that, you know.
Now, where you train, you know, because I've been to a number of camps, and one of the things I've always thought is awesome is, like, how you have, like, elite pro fighters, and you have kids coming in for classes in the front of the gym, and, like, they kind of all intermingle, and you never be, I mean, like, I can't go play basketball and, like, see Steph Curry shooting threes in the corner. Do you work in a place like that sometimes?
Oh, yeah. I actually joke around. We have a sparring Saturdays once a month with the little kids.
No kidding.
They can't punch each other in the head, like, face or anything, but it's all body shots. You know, okay. They don't go crazy hard, but they kick, they have shin pads on. So
yeah.
I'm always joking around when I get there early. I'm usually about to train right after them, so I put on a headgear on and boxing gloves and shin pads, and I spar them.
And has anyone taken you down in the kitty
division? Oh, they just grab out. You can see the videos on my Instagram. It's terrible. My Twitter is terrible.
We're going to be right back with Stipe after this break. You're listening to The Free For All on WSJ Digital Network.
Hi, this is Kevin Sintemong.
This is Beth Cracklauer.
Check us out on the Off Duty podcast. We talk about food,
cocktails,
all of the finer things in life.
Check us out at WSJ.com/podcast
and become a subscriber on iTunes.
WSJ Podcasts. Listen ambitiously. Now, back to the show.
We are back here. The champ is here. The heavyweight champion of the world in the Ultimate Fighting Championship, Stipe Miocic of Cleveland, Cleveland's champion. It's a remarkable story. Is it accurate that you also do some work as a firefighter EMT?
Yeah, I gotta work 24 tomorrow.
You do?
Yeah. That's why I'm not staying an extra night.
That is, first of all, it's an amazing career, you know, considering that what you have to do it and the lives that you are involved in protecting. How'd you get into that?
You know, I went to college and all that, got done with college, and I just could be stuck behind a desk. You know, I'm too fidgety and, you know, always got to do something.
Did you have a desk job at one point?
No. I have no hair right now. But when I got done with college, you know, I had a bunch of buddies that were doing, you know, being police officers, you know, firefighting. I was thinking about Coast Guard. You know, I just didn't know what I wanted to do. But then I talked to my buddies, they're all firefighters, and I'm like, man, what a great job. You know, I get to help people and, you know, just the hours and stuff like that. I'm like, man, I should do this. So I went to school. I went to paramedic and firefighting school.
How intense is that?
I mean, it's tough. You know, paramedics are tough, you know, because it's a year long and it's a lot of studying, you know, yeah. And actually, it's not so much about learning how to do everything. It's learning about the whole anatomy about it, like
Sure. Why
it's doing it. You know, why would we push this drug if someone was sick? The reason is that this is what's happening. You know, so you're learning more in depth in it, almost like a doctor. Right. We're not even close, but to that aspect.
Now, when you're on a 24-hour shift, are you typically at the house or are you at home and get on call? How's that work?
Well, I work at two departments. I'm part-time at two departments, so
Got
I can pick my schedule a month in advance.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I could pick a 12-hour shift. I could pick, you know, 24. I've actually worked 60 hours straight before.
Okay. Now, if my son was here, who's obsessed with that career, he would ask, where do you get to sit on the truck?
I'm in the back.
You're in the back.
Yeah. I'm usually in the back. Just I wouldn't mind. I'd rather be in the back because it means I can go to the house first.
Can you explain something to me? I don't know if you ride on a ladder truck, but does the wheel on the back of a ladder truck? What does that do?
I think that's just New York because we don't.
Oh,
have
really?
That. Yeah,
okay.
That thing's huge.
It's like, crazy.
We have a ladder truck, but it's not like nowhere near that size.
Yeah. What are the guys like that you've met through that? I mean, because I imagine that's a different kind of brotherhood, and that must be pretty special to you as well.
Oh yeah, they're amazing guys. You know, they're treat me no different. You know, they chop me down, make me feel terrible about myself. You know what I mean? I'm usually a rookie on all of them, you know, so you're the younger guy on there. So they're great guys, though. They all support me. They come to all my fights. They're pretty good guys.
You're how many years on the job there?
7.
Okay. So you're not like a probie or anything like that.
No,
you
but
are,
it's still, yeah. They make me act like I am. So it's, you know, I think they want to feel tough about themselves.
That must be amazing. You know, what do the guys think about the title belt?
Oh, they love it. You know, they're just amazing, man. They just, you know, I've gotten text messages telling, you know, how much proud they are. And, you know, I actually had a bunch of them from one station I work at, went to Vegas.
Yeah.
And they're acting like I was fighting in Vegas, so they watched the fight in Vegas for them to go to Vegas for no reason at all. But, you know, they partied out there and, you know, watched my fight in Vegas. They were so excited.
That's fantastic. What's next on the agenda?
You know, I don't know. See what the UFC wants.
But do you anticipate fighting before the end of the summertime, maybe, or probably in the fall, early winter?
Probably fall, winter. You know, it's usually every 3-4 months, probably. I don't know, though. You know, it's whatever they want. You know, I got to sit down and talk with them, too, and, you know, go over stuff. And
how do you dial down in terms of training? Because I'm sure you are so amped, so up for this fight. And now, you're doing a lot of stuff now, of course, to promote. But, you know, you're not in there sparring every single day right now. You're probably taking it down a little bit.
No, yeah. I took a few days off because I just had so much going on the first week with media and all that. But I worked out, and then I worked out again this week. So, tomorrow I'll work out again, Thursday. You know, I'll get a couple workouts. And nothing crazy where it's going to, you know, get me worn out or, you know, get myself hurt. So I'd probably go for a run here and maybe another day do some pad work.
Are you a nutrition obsessive? Do you watch what you eat?
I mean, I do watch what I eat. I actually have a really good company, Omega Fit Meals. They send me meals every week. So I get about, you know, 25 to 28 meals pre-made. So I stick them in the microwave and they're amazing.
And they're sort of like heavy protein type of things and not like crazy carbs. They're not sending you mac and cheese in the mail.
No. I have like a, you know, one's like a bison burger with like,
got it,
you know, potatoes and,
right,
you know, another one's like, I don't know. It's good stuff. You know, it's clean. Plus I'm lazy, you know, and like, you know, it's hard for me to cook with my fiance because we work out together. So when she gets off work and we come home at like 8:30, 9 o'clock, we're like, ugh, we don't want to cook. So now it's just so much easier. We can stick it in the microwave and call it a day.
Now, what's her thing?
She's a nurse.
She's a nurse, yeah. But she's also into working out. And what does she do?
She's cardio and stuff like that. Just, you know, typical girl stuff.
You won't do any sort of like, you know, floor work with her or, you know, any sort
of. We do, but that's
probably. Oh, I led you right into that one. you know, this happens to people in your line of work. And I imagine that if it hasn't happened already, it'll probably happen down the line. But, you know, people see a heavyweight champion, telegenic, somebody from America, you know, maybe we should put him in a movie. Maybe we should be, you know, putting him next to Sly Stallone or Van Damme. Would you ever consider something like that?
Oh, 100%. Just hope I have no lines.
You don't want lines.
No, I stuttered too much and I talked too terrible. So
you don't want some big speech at the end of the movie or anything like that.
Maybe
know,
like one word, like freedom, you know, like, something like that.
Well, it's been a pleasure having you here, Stipe. Congratulations on the belt. Best of luck. Say hi to my friend Dana. You know, and congratulations on bringing some hardware back to Cleveland, folks. You know, you're sitting there waiting for the Cavs to do it. The curse is over. This man has done it. The heavyweight champ is here in the studio at the Free for All. Stipe Miocic, thanks so much for your time.
Hey, thanks for having me on. This is awesome.
All right, bye bye, guys.
WSJ Podcasts. Listen ambitiously.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.